The Lord's Spirit be upon my lips. Amen. To put tonight's gospel in perspective, it took place on the Saturday before Palm Sunday. That is, Jesus arrived in Bethany on Saturday and was served this dinner on Saturday evening. The crowds, which the Gospel mentions coming to see him and to see Lazarus, having heard that they were in Bethany, arrived probably on Sunday, the following day. And Jesus' triumphal ride into Jerusalem, which we celebrate on Palm Sunday, actually took place on Monday. Now, I know the sequence of events is sometimes very confusing enough in itself, but the order in which our lectionary places the readings and the order in which we celebrate the events confuses it even further. So I thought I'd spell out the actual chronology there just a little bit to help make sense of it all. This passage tonight is very special. It's jammed with meaning and with irony. Jesus has been in the wilderness, keeping out of the way. His life has been threatened and he's been subject to arrest. But those attempts have been unsuccessful. And so he stayed away from the vicinity of Jerusalem because his time has not yet come. And now he's back in public again. Bethany is only about 2 miles from Jerusalem, and the word spreads rapidly that he's been seen and that Lazarus, the man that Jesus raised from the dead after he had been dead for 4 days, is with him. The raising of Lazarus has caused many Jews to go over to Jesus, and so this has raised the ire of the chief priests. And so there is interest stirred in two camps by the presence of Jesus. And what we see here in this story, as well as in the polarization caused by Lazarus, is the kind of division and polarization that Jesus often caused. By his words, by his deeds, by his very presence, he winnowed wheat from chaff. The same words, deeds, and presence, either stirred devotion or they stirred violent opposition. He threatened the status quo, the powers that were in place, all of those who had something to lose. And he called those who were powerless, who had nothing to lose, or who were willing to give up that which they did have in trade for eternity. Recognizing for those who were willing to give it up that which they had, they never really owned. And the trade of that for eternity was an easy one to make. So here's Jesus, eating dinner with his friend Lazarus, being waited upon by Martha, when suddenly Mary, the reflective sister, the one who wished to sit at Jesus' feet, commits a brazen act. She takes an expensive perfume from India called nard, worth a year's wages, 300 denarii is a year's wages. This is perhaps $30,000 worth of perfume, to put this in perspective. I have no idea where Mary got that much expensive perfume. But perhaps $30,000 worth of perfume, and she dumps thousands of dollars of it on Jesus' feet. And then again, brazenly, she lets down her hair. This was a scandalous and highly immodest act in that day. Women were never, ever seen in public with their hair exposed. This was the equivalent of David dancing naked in front of the Ark of the Covenant. It was this scandalous. And she wipes Jesus' feet with her hair. So what Mary, the quiet, contemplative one, has done here would profoundly shock everyone present in that room. Judas is the only one whose comments are recorded. But you can be sure everyone else present was scandalized. Judas, speaking words that sound of holiness and compassion, asks why this fortune and perfume was not sold and the proceeds given to the poor. This sentiment is probably not his alone. And John makes careful notation here that his compassion is a sham, because he was the treasurer for the disciples and he stole regularly from their money purse. But even if his sentiment had been pure, as it might have been in the minds of the other disciples present, Jesus refuses to criticize Mary. and he actually commends her actions. Thousands of dollars of perfume extravagantly put on his feet, her hair exposed in public. And then Jesus says something very telling. First he says, "Let her alone. Let her keep it, the remaining nard, for the day of my burial." So clearly he knew that this was coming, and it was coming soon. And then he also says, "The poor will always be with you, but you will not always have me." So here, finally, the man who did not exploit his godhood, but who emptied himself and became a servant, who would later wash the feet of his disciples to show what humility really was, blessed the extravagance of Mary's gift. I don't know how to say it more directly than this, but Mary got it. Well, Peter realized, finally, that Jesus was the Messiah. He didn't understand what that meant when he first said it, and it took him a while, really, to understand the full meaning of it. The other disciples finally realized who Jesus was after his death and resurrection, when he came back and stood among them. But Mary got it, and she got it early. She understood exactly who Jesus was. And in this brazen act, she submitted herself completely to God. This act of submission shocks everyone who's present there. But finally, it is the very act of submission that every last one of us is called to do. Ours is not an age that respects submission. It respects assertion, aggression, independence. It exalts the individual. Mary understood who she was in relation to God, as God was with her in the person of Jesus Christ, and her submission was a scandal. In our day, when submission is utterly without honor, we too must cause a scandal. We must be so convicted, so submitted to Jesus Christ, as to cause an embarrassment. It cannot be a polite distance, a polite and intellectual acceptance of who he was. God took on human life for us, suffered and died for us. Mary got it. She understood. And in the overwhelming gratitude she felt for the privilege of knowing and being present with Jesus Christ, she shocked and scandalized all of those around her. I pray to God that each of us, somehow, in our lives, will cause the kind of scandal that Mary did. Amen.